home again. Great to be back in the States to rehearse what God has done and to eat it in and out at the same time. Rice and beans were getting a little bit old, so we needed a break. I think it should be a requirement for the video. I just thought about this during the video because it's nice and cool. Like you pump the heater up to like 95 degrees and turn on the humidifier just so you can get a better feel. Put some animals in here loose so you can get the smells and you can get the full experience. I was thinking of soaring over West Palm, and that way you get the full olfactory experience and everything. I've made some notes. Just I kind of want to keep on track and talk about what God has done. The video talks a lot about it, but I want to start off by saying just thanks for being faithful and thanks for continuing to do the work here. I come back and see a lot of new faces, and that's a blessing. Seeing new staff, that's a good sign. That means there's a need for new staff, and that there's some of the staff that are going and they're pastors now. How exciting is that? And it's wonderful to come home and see that your church hasn't changed, that the preaching hasn't changed, and that God is still glorified in that place. So thanks for being faithful. And the music's been great. That's something that really stands out from our church. Music rough. I never thought about it, but in America, I mean, we grew up playing the recorder and kind of learning some basic music. So even if you don't play an instrument, you've had some basic music growing up, and you can probably kind of understand, at least comprehend a tune. But for some reason, mosquito people, I know it's rough. It's just rough. So, and services are so polished. You know, the transitions are so smooth, and it's just something in the culture that doesn't happen so much. And it's, I don't know, there's people possessed in town. So, I mean, that's a small problem. I'm not going to fight the smooth transitions. But if somebody's going to sing a special, they'll come up and get the microphone. This work. Oh, that's wrong. Can you start the music again? And it's just, the song's rough, but praise the Lord. So we don't have that much many specials. We're still waiting on some musical talent at church. We've been back in the States since October 30th, and we started out back east, flew into Atlanta, and went to a brand new new church for us. A friend from college is now a pastor in Nashville, and that church is planning to take us on early next year. You know, then we went to some churches that already support us and rehearsed what God has done with them. And there's a Scott Wendell. Some of you know Scott Wendell, Valley Forge Baptist Temple. They're planning a trip to come build something for us in 2017. They wanted some specifics. I'm like, you're not coming until 2017. I can't give you many specifics. we can build something. I don't know what. But and then we made our way to Idaho, and my parents were able to see our new baby. That was a blessing. And really, Megan was 1 year old the last time they saw him 3 years ago. And so that was a blessing to see my mom. She's recovering from a stroke, and she's actually doing well. So we thank God for that time, and time with Don's dad and my brother. And it's good to see family, and it's good to see you guys again. Why is Sandra laughing at me? She's like, oh, here it comes. we're progressing in the language. You would say we're fluent if you heard us, but the more Spanish you speak, the more you understand that you're not doing right, but we can kind of communicate. We are beginning to study the Miskito language. We've had about six lessons in Miskito. And the order's all messed up in Miskito. It's totally different. People always ask, is it like Spanish? It's like Spanish, though, right? No, it's like its own language, all different, all new words. it's like English? No, it's its own language. You have to learn all new words, but the order's all messed up. For instance, yang miskitu lantikaisna. I'm learning mosquito. Actually, to say it like I just said it would be, I mosquito learn. So the verb's at the end, so that's always hard to think that way. But we're trusting God that He'll help us to learn that language. The majority of the people speak Spanish where we're at in West Palm, but it's necessary to learn the language really to communicate with some people. I preach in Spanish every week, but some people just sit there and they don't understand Spanish that well. In the schools, in the high schools, and in the elementary school, they're required to use Spanish so that the kids that are younger all speak Spanish well. But to reach out to the villages and to communicate there, it's going to be necessary to learn that language. So we're excited about that. In the next term, we're going to hit it even harder on top of doing a bunch of other stuff. But so please pray for that, the language study, and then really improvement. Continued improvement in Spanish. Our support is good. This church supports us. 20% of our support comes from this church. So you have to stay faithful, all right? if you see some, you see some shrinkage, you got to bring like more people in to support the hallways, if no one else, all right? Our support's been good. Our support's budgeted to take care of us. So there's been a lot of projects we've been trying to build, and that's made things tight, but I think we just need to raise money specifically for projects. But God's been faithful. We've lost a couple, but we've also gained support without doing anything. So we thank God for it. So to kind of tell you what's happened since we went to West Palm, I went one month ahead of my wife to find a house. And we had a house all set up, and we were going to rent it, and I was going to put a kitchen in it and different things. We'd get there, and they didn't want to rent it to us really anymore, and it was a good thing because after looking at the size of it, the location, it's like the number one worst place in town to be accosted by drunks. So God led us to see. I was able to see some different houses. We have some hotel owners there that if you ever come, you'll meet them, Barry and Irma, and they've been a big help to us there. And he was the son of a Moravian missionary, and he's now 80 years old, but he speaks English. He was illegally in this country for many, many years, making money and sending it back to build a hotel in West Palm. And he's a pilot as well. That's the name of the hotel is the Pilot Hotel. And so he showed me some different houses in town. And he said, let me show you my daughter's house. She's not renting it, but they built this house 7 years. They never lived in it. And it's like an 1,800 square foot house, concrete house. It's got running water inside and stuff. And there's like five houses that have running water inside the house. So I want to see it. And it was a beautiful house. And they said, yeah, they're not renting it, but I said, would you ask them if they would, please? Because the alternative is a house that has the only water it has is in the rain barrel outside. It was a decent-sized house, but that was the water situation. The other option was really kind of gross, so would you please ask them if they'd rent it? So they've been renting us that house for the entire time that we've been there. And basically, they built the house and never lived in it. It's in West Palm. They actually live in the States, work in Florida. He does construction. They have no plans ever to come to West Palm. So God had them build us a house 7 years ago for us to rent. So security has been a bit of an issue. I'm sure Pastor shared some of that with you. Had people in our house, I don't know, six, seven, eight times. We leave for church, come back to a broken window, and something's gone. Leave to have the baby for, how long were we gone? A month. Came back, and they'd been in the house several times, stole thousands of dollars worth of stuff. So we asked the owners about putting bars in the windows and helping us out with that, and they just didn't want to do that. So a future project is to build a more secure house. But in the meantime, I've put up a chain link fence with barbed wire, and I have two new Dobermans that now protect the house and kill the tarantulas while I'm gone. Nice. I normally machete them because it's just too disgusting to smash a tarantula. They're too like crunchy. They're way too crunchy to smash. So that's the reason I use the machete. But the dogs just go after them. They paw them and grab them. They've been bit before, obviously, because they're real quick the way they bite them and throw them. But they're keeping the tarantula population under control while we're gone. So don't worry about that. Water in West Palm is a constant problem. They hand dig wells about 25 feet deep, and they go wait for the dry season, dig down as deep as they can until they start hitting water because the well starts to fall apart and they have to stop. It's not safe to be down there. And so every dry season, guess what? Every well runs out of water. And you see people walking on from the river with a bucket on their head. And we had to have water delivered to our house last dry season. And so that's kind of a situation, something we want to remedy maybe if our next place, if we're able to do that. Power is provided by a generator in West Palm, a big generator, and it goes out pretty constantly. That's the nice thing about an iPad. I always thought, oh, it's liberal. You know, have to preach from an iPad. And I never did it until I got to West Palm. And the reason I started using it because I didn't have a printer. But then I don't know if it was the first time I used it or one of the first few times I used it, I was preaching along from my iPad. Power goes out. And I'm like, I can still see my notes just fine. This is awesome. This is the way to go. Built in light. Don and the kids are doing great. We had Lily born just over a year ago, and we traveled to Managua to go to a little better hospital to have the baby born. And she's a dual citizen, have a Nicaraguan passport. We had six in our family. Now we have her passport plus her Nicaraguan passport. So like the passport stack is this thick, but she's way cheaper on immigration because she's Nicaraguan. So a lot of people ask what we do for fun in West Palm. Every Friday we go to the one restaurant that you won't get sick at. It's called Wonky Pizza, and the name Wonky means it's the name of the river that we live by is Wonky. It sounds wonky, but but they serve a pizza-like substance that we enjoy every Friday. And sometimes they don't have real cheese, and they put a cheese-like substance on the pizza. And if they run out of sauce, they just put ketchup on it, and it's fine. we had some great pizza today. I take Mondays off, our family day, and we'll go to the river and let the kids swim in the river, and we enjoy doing that. If it's not raining too hard, we'll do that. I want to talk about the church a little bit. God, it really is a big thing that Wilfredo is working with us there. As an American going there, everybody looks at you like, oh, here's the rich guy. I'm going to rob it. I'm going to steal everything he has from his house, or I want to try to work for him. I want to position my. I want to go to church just so I can work for this guy. We've had work done, and people take advantage of us. And oh, you know, this happened, and I lost the product, and I have no way of recompensing it. I have no way to make it right. And that's happened many, many times. An American can go to a place and be taken advantage of, and not speak the language very well, and people not even think ministry; they're thinking opportunity. So it took us a while to understand. Daniel's back there. Yeah, I understand that. It took us a while to understand it to the extent that it is. But with time, that's changed because just through the preaching of God's word, we explain to the people we're not here to. So many missionaries in the world today, missionaries, 90%, 95% maybe aren't starting churches. Their focus isn't evangelism, though they might give out tracts. It's humanitarian aid. So they've gone to a SPOM and, hey, let's build you a church. Your schools look terrible. Let's build you a new building. Or, oh, you're hungry. Let's give you some food. There's a guy in a town called Keith Elia, and he's retired. He has good intentions. He retired from Xerox, and he wants to help people. And they're poor, and they're hungry. So he started a ministry basically called Beans for Jesus. And he provides beans for them to plant in the planting season. And all he expects back is say he gives 10 pounds of beans. He wants 10 pounds back plus a tithe, 10%. And he wants to help him in that way. The problem with that is the mosquito people are poor and hungry, and the beans that he gives them are ready to eat. So he's not going to see many of those beans back, and that's fine, but they're so used to people giving him things and not giving him what they need the most. So that's been a difficult challenge, but people are starting to figure out, okay, he's not here just to get, he's not going to give us anything. I've learned there's instances once in a while. After a while, I mean, there's so many drunks in Waspam that ask for, hey, my family's starving, and I felt bad for them. Their family probably is starving. This guy's obviously drunk, but his family probably is starving. Here's some rice. But then I realized they would sell the rice to buy more alcohol, and it wasn't the solution that I had hoped for. But having Wilfredo there has been such a huge advantage. He speaks nice and slow and deliberate in Spanish, so we communicate really well. And he speaks Mosquito, of course. He preaches mostly in Mosquito, so the people get, if they don't understand Spanish well, they understand him. And he's been a huge blessing. And I hope you'll pray for him. I don't know if I don't think I put him in my prayer letter as a specific prayer request, but pray for him and his wife Jahira. He's been married just over, well, coming up on a year. And the church in Waspam will be a key church for the churches we plan to start on the village, because in the villages, because who is going to be the pastors of these churches? People from Waspam, and who's going to support those churches? The Waspam church. So pray for that church, that it will continue to grow, that we could get a building, that Wilfredo would stay faithful. He's a go-getter. He showed up in Waspam a week after I arrived there with basically nothing, with like $10 in his pocket, and ready to preach the gospel. And he said, hey, you ready to go preach the gospel? Yeah. All right, let's go. We spent like 8 hours every day. I'm it's 90 degrees and 80% humidity. And I'm dying every day, but I can't show weakness, right? I mean, yeah, I'm here to win souls. Let's do this. And I've had to cut it back a little bit from that, but he's constantly preaching the gospel. And it's a huge blessing to have him doing that. He's been a great example for young men, and he's brought a lot of young men into the church and kept them faithful, because he's had a past. He was on the street with a beer in his hand when another pastor said, hey, he had something on his shirt. He had some kind of shirt, because down there they get used American clothes, so they have all kinds of American sayings that they don't understand. There was like a 16-year-old boy walking around that said, I love boys' bags and shoes or something like that. Like, he didn't understand what it said on his shirt. There's some hilarious ones we've seen. But he had something on his shirt. He said, "Hey, your shirt says this. You should probably be in church, a guy with a shirt like that." And he's like, "Okay, maybe I will." And he did. And God got a hold of him. God saved him. And he gave him a desire to be in the ministry. He trained for, basically did a three-year Bible Institute. And God prepared him to be a pastor. And when we formed the church, we were able to appoint him as pastor right away. And I thank God for that, because he's a local man is so much more effective. I can't even, you think a missionary should go somewhere and be a hero, everybody loves him. But at least in West Palm, there's a barrier that we deal with. We're a help, but sometimes we feel like we're more hindrance than we are help, because there's people that come to church just for the opportunity to ask for money or for to have some kind of advantage. So we thank God for Wilfredo and his wife. We've been taking, early last year, I think January through June, every month we took a mission, just the dry season, better time to travel. We took a missions trip to a new village, and we went to Coombe, and it's about an hour away, and by truck, and then we went to Clare, we went to Kisalaya, Uwastara, that's the river, I don't know. I can't remember. We went to about six different places, and we would go and pass out tracts. We'd take about 15 people from our church, as many as we could cram into a Toyota 4Runner, and we'd pass out tracts. And in the afternoon, we'd have a evangelistic service. And these people would hear the gospel preached in Mosquito, and we saw many people accept Christ through this. It's difficult because you go one day, and you can't go back all the time and disciple these people, but it's doing two things. It's giving the gospel. People are being saved, but it's also showing the people in our church what a need they have to reach their neighboring communities, and it's giving them a burden to work in those communities. And we've been doing that. We plan to start that again early next year, and specifically the village named Coombe. There's about 1,600 people live in this village. And we went there the first time, had evangelistic service. There was probably, I think, 100 people that came to that the first time around. And then we went a second time because there's a young man that wants to start he's from the Bible Institute in Managua that's started by Bob Dayton, a BIMI missionary that's been there 50 years. That institute is now national run, and he's from that institute. He wants to start a church in Coombe. So we went a second time with him, and we helped him to purchase land and to clear it and cut down some tree trunks for him. He basically had pure jungle, and we cleared it out so he could build a church. And he's there. He just graduated this month, and he's now in Coombe living and starting to start the church there. But recently we took we had a team from Brother Skelly's church. So we know Pastor Skelly in Pennsylvania, and 10 people from his church came, and we took them all to Coombe, and we did the same sort of thing. We went and evangelized, and we had a flyer because they didn't speak Spanish. Nobody in the East speaks Spanish, and everybody in California does. But we gave them a flyer. Hey, pass these out to the people, and invited them to a service. And there was one 13-year-old boy that came on the trip, and he brought his bagpipes, and he was really good. I said, "Man, bring those bagpipes. These people have never seen anything like that. Play like 30 minutes before the service, and we'll have a bunch of kids." So he started playing. Within a few minutes, there was 100 kids surrounding him watching these bagpipes, and the adults were like, "What is that weird, loud noise?" But we had 450 people come to that service. 250 kids, 200 adults came and heard that. And that's the village where this young man named Abner is going to be starting a church. He's going to need some help. He's going to need people praying for him, too. So pray for Abner in Coombe. Okay. You're probably wondering about our container and stuff. Where's Brother Steve? Thank you so much for the container. It's enabled us to take our things to Nicaragua. We have our things in Nicaragua, but praise the Lord! About 2 weeks ago, the container itself and the tractor were released from customs. We had to pay all the full taxes on it, even though it shouldn't have been that way. But we did that. They still want somebody wants the quad. I think they want to ride that around, so they're giving us a hard time still. But we have all of our things out of customs 2 years later. But anyway, we've shipped some of them up. It's a long trip, and it's kind of expensive to ship. We shipped some necessities up there. So we were planning to load the container. As soon as it got cleared, it was cleared right away. Load it up and bring it up. So now the container is cleared. But about 2 months ago, the bridge to West Palm, there's a big cable bridge that broke, and they're not fixing it. They're going to build another bridge, and it's going to be about a year and a half probably till they finish that. It's become comedic. We enjoy it, sir. So we could pay a big rig to bring all the items to one side of the river. If they were small enough to put on a canoe and take it across, we could get things. It's really not worth it because sometimes those tip over. So travel's been a little bit difficult. We have a 2001 Ford Toyota 4Runner, and my first trip to Managua was about 20-hour drive of like drive through Hollister Hills for 20 hours, and then you're in Managua. And so I destroyed my suspension on my first trip to Managua, and we put about $2,000 into the suspension, building it back up, and it's been a good vehicle for us. It's a diesel, and it's been running along. But travel's a little bit difficult now that the bridge is down. I can no longer get to the bank in my car. I now take a motorcycle to the river, and they put the motorcycle in a canoe, take it across the other side, and let me out on the other side. So that's my trip to the bank, and then do it again on the way back. The first time I was in a canoe about this big, and we sat in it, got the motorcycle in it, about four or five guys in it, and it was like this far from the edge of the water on both sides. These people live in canoes; they know what they're doing, right? But sometimes they don't have the greatest judgment. If they're getting paid, they're gonna give it a shot, and they don't care about your motorcycle. And they've dumped at least a couple of them in the river already. But we're like going back and forth. There's a little bit of waves, and the water's kind of starting to come in. I'm thinking, I've been in the bathtub long enough. This is not a good not a good thing. after doing it, I thought that is not advisable to do that. But you have to go to the bank somehow. All right. I want to talk a little bit about the. Better keep an eye on time. What time should I be done? I want to talk about the Mosquito people a little bit. You saw in the video that their houses, just a wood house up on stilts. A house the size of this platform would actually be pretty big. And there's houses half the size that have 8, 10, 12 people living in them. Just because of the great poverty, the houses rot out. And so the majority of houses, the people, the nice thing is when you go door knocking, they'll invite you up and they'll listen to the gospel for 45 minutes. So they'll bring you a chair. They'll make their kids come out and sit down and listen to you. It's because their religious background. But half the time, you have to test out the deck out front of their house or patio before you actually step on it because they're so rotten. But that's the houses the majority of the people would live in. A lot of people in our church don't have electricity, so church is also church, but it's also charge your cell phone time, and. I want to tell you a little bit about the traits of the people. There's Indian people that are smaller. There's a mix with African slaves, so more like Jamaican, or there'll be 6'7" Mosquito Indians, and it's just a mixture from African heritage, and then there's also Latin mixture of Latin in that. But the Mosquito people are definitely a different culture from Nicaraguan people. They're their own people. They live in an autonomous region, so they have their own government, and they were the Contras during the war, and they were fighting for their independence. They didn't get it, and they still live under the Sandinistas, but the Sandinistas granted them their autonomy to some degree. But as a people, how would we describe them? I don't want to just say bad things. All right, there are good traits. You know, something that's a blessing is they're a warm culture. They want to talk. They want to meet new people. They're open to new people. They're gracious. People like people in the South, okay, and that would be considered a warm culture. In the northern part of America, that's more of a cold culture, and then people are less closed, less open to people. But where we're at, they're very open to people. They're open to hear the gospel. They're open. Parson is what the word comes from. But say parson. And they'll invite you to preach whatever message you want to preach to run their porch. So that's a big plus. They're very family oriented, and I'm going to say that they're very selfish. But at the same time, if one person out of eight in the family gets some work and is able to buy a couple pounds of rice, he's going to share every bit of that last bit of that food. If we have a birthday party at our church and we buy a cake for somebody that's having a birthday, little kids will have that one little piece of cake and they won't eat it. We'll all be eating it, have a good time, and they won't eat it. They'll take it home for six people to share at their house, for their mom to have some. And I've taken kids home in my car and seen their squished up little piece of cake. And a napkin. And they're going to share that with their mom. At the same time, deceitfulness is a positive character trait. if you can take advantage of somebody and get away with it, you're like a superhero. You're a hero. You'll be looked up to. And a culture without Christ is full of sin. It's dark. There's a lot of witchcraft. People, as much as people go to the hospital for medical help, they'll go to the witch doctor. And they've had the Moravian religion and the Catholic religion have been very strong. There's villages of 1,000 people that have a huge Moravian church, and they've come and built sidewalks in that village. So all the sidewalks in a village will lead to the Moravian church, and it's a village out in the middle of nowhere. They have no kind of other construction other than the Moravian church and the sidewalks leading to it. But they're dead and they're empty. The preacher works salvation. When around age 12, you finish your classes, and the girls get a white doily to put on the back of their head. That means they're a Christian now. But they're no more saved than they were before. The education is poor. They do one year left. If they finish their whole school term through high school, they would do 1 year less than we do. But it's half the time that we do per day. They do morning classes and evening classes, and the education level is low. Jose in the video is a very smart. I think he's valedictorian, salutatorian in his school, private school. And it's a little better school, but to teach him discipleship is even a struggle to kind of explain some of the deeper things. It just goes a little slower. Now I want to talk about some of our plans and projects for our next term. One of those, like I said, is to continue to learn Miskito, and we'll be there's one other white person that speaks the language that lives there, and so there's only one other white person that lives there, so. I guess that's not saying much. That's not going to work. To continue to learn the language, also to purchase the church property. We're renting the blue house there. It's a very nice house. It was filthy, disgusting when we started renting it. We've cleaned it up and painted and built the pews. And I thought, hey, we could do that. I was thinking about the pews. We could make it kind of comfortable. And Wilfredo, no, we're just going to do this. So yeah, we suffer through services on these rough pews, but that's the way he wants it. So he's the pastor. I'm gonna let him have his hard, rough pews. That's fine. But space is limited. It rains a lot from middle of May to middle of December. It rains a lot. So we have the kids out under. There was a little hut in the picture, and it's got a thatch roof. That thing does not leak. But it's also a little small for the kids now. So we're praying that as when we go back, we'll be able to buy a property. We've been looking at a property. It's just over 2 acres. It's on a corner right in the entrance to town, close to where our current church is at. Everybody coming to town, every bus that would pass would see our church there. So it's a really good location from a church planner's perspective. It's the growing area. It's like the suburbs that are growing. So it's the place to put a new church. And we've just been praying for God to confirm it, because land disputes are a huge issue, and that's something that I'm going to talk about in a minute. It's almost caused civil war. So we're praying for God for wisdom, if that's the place God has for us, and then for the finances to purchase it. The guy's asking $15,000 because there's American involved, and so we would try to get that price down. Lancaster took an offering last Sunday morning of $4,500 for property, and we would hope to build a church building there. We could start with a covered area, and we'd be very happy with that. And then also provide a house for the pastor so he could stay on the property and provide security for it. Also, this next term, we want to continue to focus on a house. We purchased a large property for a house. And, man, talk about land disputes. Yeah, there has been a lot of opposition. We did everything legal, went to a lawyer, said, is there anything wrong? Here's his paperwork. Here's us buying it. Here's the money. Here's our paperwork. Everything legal. And this is a respected lawyer. Oh, everything is good. But the truth is that there's two systems. There's the Miskito system, and then there's the Sandinista imposed on the Miskito people, and they don't really necessarily recognize that. So the best advice that I've been given is the victory goes to the strong. You go out there, and you build on it, you live it, and it's yours. That's the way the Miskito people think. If somebody goes to a piece of land, even though it belonged to somebody else, and they go and they work the land, cultivate it, live on it, it's theirs. So that's our plan. with the Dobermans. Yeah. And Glocks, but we've fenced it in. We've built a small wood warehouse to put construction materials in. I have 1,500 cement blocks. Any cement workers here? Or you do construction, Steve. The cement block has to be made one at a time. They mix the concrete on the ground, shovel it into a metal mold, tamp it down, lift it up, let it dry in the sun for 3 days, and then you have a block. I have 1,500. This guy, I found a guy that can do 150 blocks in a day. It's amazing to watch and backbreaking to even think about. But so we're preparing to build a house this upcoming term, as the Lord provides. And then this upcoming term to focus on Coombe. Now that there's a young man there, he's solid. He's been training in the Solid Institute. Real sharp guy, young guy. He's planning to get married early in the spring. And we're going to pray for his wife, because where he's going to be living for where she's from is a total different world. So pray for her. But we want to help him get some kind of roof over so he could have services. It comes down hard. So we need to get him a roof out there. And that's another building project we want to help him with, help him to have a house. He would be happy to live in a wood hut, literally, that was this big, long enough to lay down in. And he would go and he would serve God there, and he'd be happy to do it. So we want to help him with that, and we want to continue our outreach trips early next year as we go back. Pastor, you think we could take a couple questions, maybe? All right. Anybody have a question? I think you're in, Pastor Steve. people. It depends who you. There's really not good statistics, but it's between. I've heard 7,000, I've heard 15,000. Most places say about 14,000, 15,000 people. But it's always growing. And the Mosquito people, what's interesting is they don't keep track of population, because they move around to stay with his family. And they hardly marry. So they shack up with somebody, and then that doesn't work out, and leave their children there, and they go, and they're always moving to different villages. So they know how many houses are in the village. Oh, how many people live here? There's 400 houses. Okay, how many people? they know how many houses, but not how many people. So that's why it's kind of sketchy. But about 1,500 people, and there's about 70 villages we could reach from West Palm, and some missionaries they'll travel around to a new village, start a new church here. We see it most beneficial to stay in West Palm and train guys there and help them start churches in these other villages. Anybody else? Mike. Yes. Where do we get the gas? Okay, gas trucks come, and in the 2 years we've been there, they've rolled. They've rolled their gas trucks, and there's no gas for a week, 2 weeks. Power's out for longest outage has been 5 days straight, and we lost some meat from that. But we have since got a big generator, a generator house that a church bought us. So that's we can run that 8 hours a day, and then keep the refrigerator cooled enough for our food. Okay, they were taken across in canoes in barrels, and that is just outrageous. But somebody recently put a pump and a pipe across, and they pump it from one truck to the other truck on the other side of the river, and they get it up that way. The bridge being out has driven the prices really high on construction materials and gas and food, everything, since we've been gone. It's because they have to pay the extra. Yes. Right. Yeah, the Sandinista government is socialist, so they have what Obamacare is going to be in 20 years. And can I say that? No, I can't. they have socialist medical, so anybody can go in and get free medicine, free care, and the care is very poor. Move along, take this, take that, and it's just not the right. It's not the right diagnosis. It's not the right medication. the best we've done is go online and read a bunch of articles about what's this thing crawling out of my arm, what should I take for it, okay, and that's probably helped us the most. What's this rash I've had for a year? I don't know. Honestly, if we had a serious health problem, I would stay at the house until we could transport them to the person to Managua. It would be safer as far as the infection and stuff like that. Yes. In our house, we have regular toilets and a septic tank. Almost every, 95% of people use the outhouse. And I'm in the process of building an outhouse on my property for my guard. We have to keep full-time guards. at our house right now. There's guard day, guard by day, guard by night. We had guards when our house was broken into 5 times too. But I think I have better guards. We'll see. And the dogs help keep people honest. So generally, Central America, like, people throw trash everywhere, so it's kind of like that. And in the villages, there's projects, there's missionaries that have come and built bathrooms and toilets for people, and they don't use them. Why you want to be confined? And you've been in that house before? Who wants to be confined in there? They just go in the jungle. So nature runs its course that way. Great question. Yeah. Austin. Yes. I treat it with bleach. Yeah, I bought a big tank and tied it into my house system. I poured it in, fill it with water, and treat it with bleach, appropriate amount of bleach, appropriate guesstimate of how much bleach I should put in it. I could 24 hours, 12 hours, something like that. Yeah, I could put enough water in a 600-gallon tank for it to last a week. So. Yes. Okay. She asked what the mosquito people do for a living. And there's very, they don't. I mean, they don't make a living. And the heritage of their culture is just live off the land, share with each other, trade. But the people in Waspam are developing more, and there's more of a need for money, and there's not work. And every day, almost, I have people coming to the fence. Okay, remind me of your question, but I got to talk about this real quick. What's this mean to you? Go away, right? Okay. So I do a little mini bus route in my 4Runner for church, and there's an old widow that I pick up, and older lady, and I pick her up. So she has some people living with her, and I can't go all the way to her house because of some fences and some terrain. But I go to the road and I look and see if she's coming, because sometimes she's sick. And her daughter-in-law, like 2 weeks straight, she was like, okay, guess she's not going. She's sick or something. But even in the third week, I had a mosquito lady that was in the car already, and I saw her go. She goes, oh wait, she said come here. I goes, this means come here. Yeah, sorry. Gabe does it all the time. Yeah, he'll call somebody over, but that means come here. And if I'm thinking come here when I do it, I don't do it. I have to think, tell them to go away, and they'll come. Okay, so unemployment is huge, and what guys will do? They'll walk around town. Younger guys, older guys with their machete. Hey, can I chop your grass for you? So no, it's paid for by somebody else. It's taken care of. Can I do anything with my machete for you? I can't hire everybody, so it's difficult. And they really, I mean, they have no guys graduate high school and even in our church, and it's like we have ambition, we have plans, we have what's the word? Opportunity. We have opportunity in America, and literally they don't have opportunity. And that's I've seen God use that in the fact that they'll come to Bible training, and they'll have the time to come to any if we had service 7 days a week, they would come to it. So that's a blessing in that way, but it's very hard for them to live. They'll go and you could go and dig clams in the river and still try to sell some of those. You can look for random work. They call it chamba. Use chamba, okay. Just a little work for the day, so they can make $4 for a hard day's work. And the other question was about hurdle for the ministry. The poverty is a hurdle because it creates such a barrier between us and the people. Not so much with Wilfredo and them, though. They do see churches as an opportunity to ask for things. But really, a church there can't support. They can't like to support the community either, because there's the people that make up the church are extremely poor and they need help, and then people are coming to ask for more help. So, really, there's huge need, and we're praying, and we're seeing God provide for those who are faithful in church, and praise God for that. Hey, be faithful to God, trust God, you know, work, try to find work, try to do this, try to do that, and the people that are faithful in church, I've tried to give work here and there. So the poverty has been a difficulty. The other obviously has been just religious background. The mindset of works is so prevalent, and so breaking through that. Mike, third question. Third's going to be a doozy. Last one was septic. Okay. Okay, that's a very much better question than sanitation question. we're learning and we're praying a lot and we're trying to figure out how this is going to work. We want indigenous churches that can support themselves. That's the goal, that they can support their pastor. And the pastor hasn't had to work. He's done construction. He's a hard worker. He's a great construction worker. When you put him on a project, he's on it. And he lays brick and concrete. But to have him work full-time to make a meager living, it would just be unfruitful. So we support him. He's received some support from his sending church and from another missionary. But the goal is to get the Waspom Church supporting him fully. That's very difficult when somebody tithes and their tithe for a month is $2. That's very, very hard to support. So we want to help with things like a building. $15,000 for a property, that would never happen. A building, you know, I don't know what could build a building for, $15,000-$20,000 for a block, basic block building, that could never happen for them. So we want to provide a building. At that point, they wouldn't have rent. If they couldn't pay the lights, they just wouldn't have lights, and they would be fine with that. So they could still have church. So it's a balance, and it's difficult. We're trying to learn how do we take Wilfredo someday off that support and help another guy. You know, is there an end to it? And it's very difficult. It's something I want to counsel some with Pastor about. It's just, you know, biblically, how can we do this? Brother Dayton, he supports a lot of those local pastors, and it's just he feels, and it's basically they would go hungry if they didn't receive that support. At the same time, it creates a dependency. So yeah, there's two sides of it, and it's something we're working on. Next furlough, I'll have a better answer for that. Okay. Can I preach now? That was the scary part. Brother Getch said a long time ago, I heard him, maybe he said it more than once, but he's like an introvert, you know that? But he'll preach. He's an awesome preacher, right? But he's a total introvert. And he shared that he is much more comfortable preaching than giving announcements or sharing a testimony. Because when you're preaching God's word, you have the power of God, you have God's blessing on his word. And you know, he knows God's going to use his word. But when you're just giving announcements, you could just, in your own weakness, mess it up. So I was a little nervous about that part, but I'm ready to preach. This is a short challenge to you tonight from John chapter 4. We have prayer cards in the back. Thank you, Ms. Janelle, for putting those together for us. They look great and took some great photos for us, and thanks for doing the video. Many people have asked about what professional organization we had do the video. JanelleStolnaker.com. Put you in touch. John chapter 4. I want to read verse 31 to 35, and the title is Lift Up Your Eyes. Lift Up Your Eyes. And I had this message ready a year ago, and last night God said, that's not the message I want you to preach. I want you to use the text, but what you prepared is not a good message. I look back through this passage and realize I hadn't properly exegized it, if that's the proper word, expositionalized it. And I just want to spend about 15 minutes looking at this passage and look what Jesus taught his disciples. And if we're his disciples, what we should also learn from this story here. In John chapter 4, verse 31, in the meanwhile, his disciples prayed him, saying, Master, eat. But he said unto them, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. Therefore said the disciples one to another, hath any man brought him aught to eat? Jesus saith unto them, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work. Say not ye there are yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest? Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. You guys know the story of what's happened before this, the Samaritan woman at the well. And the disciples went into town to buy some food. They had been on a journey, and Jesus was tired. They were tired. They went to town to buy food. And Jesus took the opportunity to preach the gospel to the woman at the well, and she believed. And the disciples came, and that's where we picked up, and they said, Master, eat. They waited. So I don't know why he's talking to the Samaritan when we have nothing to do with the Samaritans. But they waited for him to be done, and they offered him food. And Jesus took this opportunity to teach him something. And tonight, I want us to lift up our eyes, because it's so easy for us as to become comfortable with the fact that so many people around us are dying and going to hell. In our text, the disciples were busy with life. They were on a long journey. It was midday. It was the sixth hour. And they were in town buying food. And Jesus was also very weary. It says he sat down at the well. And in verse 6, now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well. And it was about the sixth hour. And I recently read about the sixth hour. You think it's actual hour, but the hours of daylight. If the sun comes up at 6, the sixth hour and goes down at 6, the sixth hour would be 12. If the sun came up at 5, sometimes it changed a little bit, come up at 5 and went down at 6, it wouldn't be a full, it would be more than 60 minutes. But anyways, it's about midday. Sorry. It was interesting to me, but it's just kind of dumb right now. But all right. I thought it was cool at the time. I didn't explain it very well. I got to put on my glasses. Jesus took advantage. He was weary, but he took advantage of an opportunity to share the gospel with a Samaritan woman in the well. And in the process, he was teaching his disciples that there was an urgency. And today, there's that same urgency. There's a priority to share the gospel. And it's more important than our daily routine and our to-do list. Because there are 7.3 billion people, for risk of sounding like Brother Sisk, there are 7.3 billion people in the world. 7.3 billion. 153,000 people die every day. 153,000 people die every day. And that means that every second there's almost two deaths. People are dying like this in the world. If we, I don't know if you still do the death counter. If we did it, it'd be going. And the majority of these people have their religion, but they don't have a personal relationship with Christ. I always felt God called me to a place that doesn't have the religion, that doesn't have any. They have maybe their native rituals, but I want to teach them the Bible. Almost everywhere has some kind of religion, but they don't necessarily have a relationship with Christ. So the reality is there's 153,000 people dying every day. The majority, vast majority, have religion, but don't have a relationship with Christ. Tens of thousands of people are dying and going to hell every single day. What did Jesus say? Lift up your eyes and look on the fields. They're white already to harvest. In a world of 7.3 billion people, how could we possibly make a difference? How could this church make a difference in 7.3 billion people? It's way too much work. There's not enough manpower. There's not enough resources. Man, it's expensive to send a missionary. Got to pay for sanitation. How could we make a difference? Can't count on me to do it. Even if I could bring the gospel to every last mosquito person, I would only be reaching 1/30,000th of the world population. And you can't count on 90% of the missionaries that are out there, because they're giving away refrigerators and teaching people to start a coffee shop and giving away beans. Digging wells for people that now use them as a trash dumpster. That's a classic in the villages. We don't need to figure out a new strategy, but we just have to follow the plan that God has for us in the Bible. And what's God's plan? To simplify it, it's each Christian doing their part. Each Christian prioritizing the gospel over the things on their to-do list for the day. It seems impossible to make a difference when there's tens of thousands of people dying every day without Christ. Every day. Man, another day passed. A week passes, 500, half a million people died and went to hell. But honestly, it's overwhelming, but I don't think that's the reason that we miss opportunities to share Christ. I think we're just too focused on the temporal things of daily living. I think that because I'm a human being and I do the same thing. Just like the disciples, they were prioritizing lunch on this occasion. We're too focused on what we have to do that day, what we have to accomplish, that we can't take the time and energy to share Christ with an unsaved person. If there's tens of thousands of people dying every day, we have to. We have to take the moment to share Christ. We simply need to lift up our eyes. Look on the field. They're ripe and ready for the harvest. My goal is not to make everybody feel guilty. Sometimes you sit there and you feel guilty. Because guilty is a poor motivator. It leads to hypocrisy. My goal is that we would simply lift up our eyes and see the need. Let it affect our hearts. that it affect our actions, that we would think like Christ, that we would see the world like Christ sees the world. After Jesus spoke with the Samaritan woman, the disciples wanted Jesus to eat. Okay, you're done now. Take some food. But Jesus turned it into a teaching moment. He wanted to teach the disciples something. How many of you are a disciple of Christ? There's 12 more in here. We can learn from this as well. We can learn from what Jesus said just a few verses and apply it to our lives. And I see three lessons that I want us to take from the counsel of Jesus regarding evangelism. In John 4:31 again, in the meanwhile, while his disciples prayed him, saying, Master, eat. But he said unto them, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. Therefore said the disciples one to another, hath any man brought him aught to eat? Jesus saith unto them, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work. The first lesson we see that Jesus taught them was that the Father will meet the daily needs of his servants. He will meet the daily needs of his servants. Surely Jesus was hungry. It was lunchtime. They'd been on a long journey. He inhabited a human body that was hungry. But he wanted to teach his disciples, which hopefully includes us, that God's work is a priority over our comfort sometimes. Look at verse 32. John 4:32. But he said unto them, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. What is that meat? Joy? Look at verse 36. And he that reapeth receiveth wages and gather fruit of eternal life, that both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. Maybe that meat's joy. Maybe that meat is a resting and trusting in God to provide. That's kind of the context. But what Jesus literally said is, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me. And meat is simply food. They're synonyms. It's my food, my substance, my provision is found in serving God. And some of you are going, I don't understand that. And I think that's the problem. We don't understand it because we don't live it. So often we focus on getting the comforts and the dainties. We joked before coming off furlough, all the king's dainties we were going to enjoy while we're in the States. Now we're full, all right? We don't want any more. But we focus on getting the comforts and the pleasures in life for ourselves through food, whatever pleasure, whatever entertainment, recreation, whatever comforts. And America is a very comfortable place. It's a convenient place, right? There's a button to fix that. There's a button to make that feel better. That's what, I don't know if Miss Melissa's in here, but yeah, there's a button. Man, we're always hot in the house. It's always inside of our house. It's between 82. I have a little thing that tracks the temperature and humidity. My wife says, "Get rid of that thing." But inside of our house is always between 82 and 86 degrees and 65 to 80% humidity, always at all times. And get air conditioning. Yeah, the power system for the town would not run our air conditioning, so it's not an option. But I'm not complaining. But I'm saying I'm American. It's comfortable here. It's convenient. There she is. There's a button for that. And I know I'm a missionary, but I still used to be a cop, so I'm going to use this illustration. Okay, did you kind of understand what it's like to be how it is for a drug addict? Okay. I've heard that the crack is one of the most addictive drugs, and that first time you take it is the most pleasurable experience you'll ever have in your life. Not to tempt anyone, but because you'll never attain it again. You'll spend the rest of your life, or the rest of your money, the rest of your life, you'll waste your family trying to attain that high again, but you can never do it, even with more. Right? So we kind of understand what happens to drug addicts. They have that experience. I can't tell you how many heroin addicts I've seen that have destroyed their arms and legs and bodies and families and lives and basically living, selling their body and living in terrible situation for their drug. Why? They're trying to attain that same high. They're trying to live that high, live that situation. And like drug addicts, sometimes we can try to recreate a pleasurable experience we had in the past by recreating the circumstances, that restaurant, that dessert, that movie, video game, or some other form of entertainment, some new toy, to buy some kind of joy in our life. Trying to attain pleasure or joy, and some people do it through shopping. Man, I have a relative. I'm not going to even make it. She buys a lot of stuff, right, for the sake of buying stuff, and their house is full, and they have stuff stacked up. But, anyways. she likes to buy, and she's trying to gain pleasure from doing that. And we can do that in so many different ways. Do you agree that we live in an indulgent society? You do. Okay. I'm starting to feel guilty. Like the missionary comes back and castigates all the all the Americans. No, I'm the same way. I think the same way, but I can see it a little better now. We live in an indulgent society. We indulge upon ourselves. I do it. You do it. There's a couple of you really holy that don't do it. But and I'm not condemning you, but I'm warning that we live in Sodom. Maybe not to the degree of Sodom. We're surrounded by it. So when you're surrounded by something, it influences you. You're influenced by what you're surrounded by. But I believe that Jesus has explained there's a greater provision. There's a greater provision than what can be found and what we can buy. And it's only found in doing the work of God. There's no replacement. If you don't know what it really means, what's the work of God? You know, I'll explain that in the third point. But the Father will meet the daily needs of those who are serving Him. That's a lesson that Jesus told His disciples. I have meat that you know not of. You don't know anything about the provision that I have in doing my Father's work. Now, what was the second lesson that Jesus taught His disciples in verse 35? Say not ye, there are yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest. Some people read this wrong. They read it like a statement. They say not ye, that there are yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest. But it's a question. Say not ye, there are 4 months, and then cometh harvest. Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes, and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. We see the lesson that there's an urgency. Don't wait 4 months and say you're going to do it someday. Don't say you're going to do it later at a better time. There's an urgency now. Any farmers here? Any kind of farmer? Anybody have a garden? Huh. Yeah, you did. Okay. What happens to the fruits, vegetables? Marijuana? What did you grow? Corn. Okay. What happens if you leave the... He said it. That's legal now, right? Anyway, what happens if you just leave the corn on past the harvest? Sure, it rots. Bugs? Okay. I didn't even talk about bugs tonight. If the fruit isn't harvested, it rots. It dries up, and they just have to burn it to start the next year. What happens to the beans and rice when they aren't harvested at the right time? The people are always watching the moons and the rains to harvest at the right time so it doesn't rot. And sometimes you buy those beans, you're like, these are nasty little wrinkly, hard, rot beans. But in the highway patrol, that's been a long time now, I saw a lot of people that left their house with plans for the day, and they died and went into eternity. And they had every intention to have years and years of life left. In Redlands, those people didn't expect to die that day. They had anticipation of retiring. They were a harvest on the vine, ready to be reaped. But now the opportunity's passed. And in the world where people are dying that fast, we're missing opportunities. Another dead, another dead, another dead. Sometimes I went to an accident where 7 people died instantly. Maybe there was a quiet calm in the world where people didn't die for a few seconds, but 7 died in that instant. When should we start to involve ourselves in the harvest for souls? Many of you are involved, but when should you start as an individual to do more? When should you get involved in the harvest? Who votes for now? The field is large. It's intimidating. And it's hard to imagine how this church would make a difference in the whole world. But it's just each person doing what God calls them to do right now. God has a plan. Man, there's so many people trying to theorize how to figure a better plan. God has a plan. We can't figure it out. I figured that out real quick. Okay, forget my plan. I'm just going to try to get my orders for the day and do that and let God work it out, because my plans ended up being me being ripped off every time. He can figure out how He's going to most efficiently reach the world. There's conferences on how to reach the world. There's conventions that have conferences on that. Instead of doing it, they're theorizing about it. God's chosen us to do it, to be the workers. He's the boss. There's still a ripe harvest in Morgan Hill. God needs willing laborers, sacrificial givers, and faithful goers. God called me to be a missionary in 2008. That's 7 years ago. Man, it was a bit of a journey going to Bible college and everything else, but deputation, language. But before he called me to participate to be a missionary, he called me to participate for years in faith promise giving and in praying for missionaries and sharing the gospel door to door with others. And I thank God that he's using us in the mission field. It's awesome. It's difficult, but it's the best place in the world for me. And there have been difficulties. There's going to be difficulties. There were bandits that tried to rob me in the road, and I did a high-speed backing maneuver and got out of there. I now have a concealed carry permit. Can I say that? I have a concealed carry permit in Nicaragua. I probably couldn't get one in California. But I've had a man came to my house and pulled a knife on me. Maybe Pastor shared the story a little bit with you. Hey, what are you doing at my house? That's basically what I confronted in like 2 seconds. Difficult things will happen. Our kids have had some weird stuff. We've had some weird diseases. There's going to be difficulties, but we're involved where God wants us to be. We're in the work of God, and it's a privilege to serve Him in that way. For me, there's no better place. Honestly, when there's opposition that's clearly from the devil, and there's been opposition, there's been threats. When Satan sends his servants to stand in our way, when he sends his messengers to break into our house, to break into the church and steal all the tithes, that's pretty low, huh? It encourages me. I think the devil is taking notice that he's losing some souls. And like it says in Psalm 62:6, He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be moved. And God is my salvation and my glory, the rock of my strength and my refuge is in God. Trust in Him at all times. Ye people, pour out your heart before Him. God is a refuge for us. It reminds me that we're in the game and that we're on the winning side. It encourages me. And people get worried, does it discourage you? This happened? No, it encourages me. I think of Brother Benefield when he lost his daughter on the mission field. Hard to be encouraged by that. But he sacrificed to do the work of God, and God will bless him for it. He has a great attitude about it. And nobody knows Brother Benefield. I mean, he's got some people in small circles that know him, but he's not a famous missionary that gave his daughter for the work of God. Because the work of God is more important than your promotion, more important than your plans, more important than your next vacation. There's an urgency to do more. According to Jesus, there's an urgency because there's a field already ripe and on the vine. And there's a limited time to reap. I must work the works of Him that sent me while it is day, that night cometh, when no man can work. Lesson number one, the Father will provide your needs. Lesson two, there's an urgency. And look at verse 35 again with me. Lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. And he that reapeth receiveth wages and gathereth fruit unto life eternal, that both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. I see here that there's a great harvest. There's a great harvest. What are we talking about when we talk about the harvest or the field? Class? Souls. Souls. From the parable of the wheat and the tares in Matthew, we see that Jesus explained that the field is the world. The field's the world. And when we talk of the field, we're speaking of eternal souls of human beings. They're going to die and spend an eternity in one place or the other. And those 7.3 billion in the future generations that could be affected in that country, that's a huge harvest. But in our passage, Jesus wasn't emphasizing the size of the harvest. And if you read on, you see that she got saved. She told some people about, hey, this is the Messiah, and they believed. And then more people came to see, and they believed because of the word of Jesus, not because of her word. And there was a great harvest. There was numbers, but Jesus wasn't focused on that. He wasn't emphasizing the size of the harvest, but the magnitude of letting that harvest go. Matthew 16:26, for what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? There's no comparison between the value of one soul and all the riches of the world. So the loss of one soul to hell is an enormous loss. It's huge. It's a loss of great magnitude. This story is in the Bible on purpose. We've all heard how the Samaritans were unrespected. They were half-breeds. the Jews would normally have nothing to do with them. We've all heard that, right? From people smarter than me. But Jesus put this here on purpose to teach us something. That we're not more important or better than anyone else, no matter our nationality. That the soul of a Samaritan woman was of great importance. Not only was it was a Samaritan, but a woman who was would be looked upon, down upon as property. There are unlovable people that we need to reach. Those quaint Mosquito Indians on the mission field. People come for a few days. Oh, they're doing their wash on a washboard everywhere you go. They're doing this, they're doing that. Oh, look, he's cutting the grass with a machete for 5 days. And I bought a gas trimmer, and I blew everybody's mind. I had another missionary left the field. He left me a pneumatic framing nailer. That thing is awesome. So I went to put up my warehouse. I had five guys working on it, and they put up the basic frame, and they put 1/8 of the walls. So, man, it's going to slice up the next day with my compressor generator and the pneumatic nailer. And they were throwing boards up there, pop, 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 pop. They were just laughing. Every time I'd use the nailer, they would laugh. They would laugh because it was too fast. But these quaint Indians live in these little huts. But the truth is, there's such darkness without Christ. Jealous. I can't even explain the jealousy the Mosquito people have. Our kids have had such problem with friends because you can only have one friend. Otherwise, that one's going to be jealous and begin to say things about you. Witchcraft. We visited. There's a man in our church. His sister's been demon possessed for 20 years. We went and visited her, and we heard the demon talking to her. She slapped the Bible out of the pastor's hand as soon as he began to read it and said, "Don't listen, don't listen, don't listen, don't listen." There's child abuse and neglect. Drunks falling in the streets, literally falling into gutters. Thieves, deceitfulness, lies. Because of the ugliness of sin, sometimes we don't have compassion. But aren't we the same without Christ? Sometimes we don't have compassion, but Jesus would want to change that in us. Sometimes his disciples didn't have compassion. He wanted to change that in them. There's a great harvest. The harvest isn't only the fact that these people could go to heaven. Think about what they're saved from. Not only do they get to go to heaven, they get to be saved from their sin. A life of sin in hell for eternity. That's the other side of the coin. Matthew 13:49, So shall it be at the end of the world, the angels shall come forth and sever the wicked from among the just and shall cast them into the furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. That's a reality. We know that they're lost, they're going to hell, right? Every single one of them, right? We know that. Of course we do. I wrote this poem because every good sermon has three points in a poem. I wrote it in Spanish. Daniel's smiling. I'm kind of nervous because you're going to be able to understand it where I messed up, but I wrote this poem in Spanish. Don't worry, I've never wrote another poem. I think I wrote one for Don when I was in high school, but I'm not going to put on my turtleneck or anything, but I want to read this poem, and I want to read it in Spanish because it rhymes, and it'll kind of explain what it means. But anyway, and it came from, I've heard somebody use the illustration of a bridge being out, and people going by, wouldn't you stop him from going over a bridge that's out and dying in the river? I've heard an illustration, and I wrote a poem about it. El puente está roto, pero por la oscuridad la gente no lo ve. Ellos pasan como no hay peligro, ellos continúan en su maldad. El agua está fuerte, muchos van a morir, pero ellos pasan y se ríen como ellos van a vivir. Los cristianos saben las malas noticias que van a pasar. Ellos saben que la deuda del pecado ellos van a pagar. Los cristianos eran perdidos también porque no les tienen compasión, porque solo unos tratan a ellos les parar. Usted también tiene la información, sabe el puente está mal. Millones están pasándole a una eternidad. Hay una urgencia, está disponible para les llegar. La oscuridad se acerca. ¿Hay alguien que se va a importar? The bridge is out. But for the darkness, the people can't see it. They pass. It sounds way better in Spanish. They pass as if there's no danger. And they continue in their wickedness. The water is strong. Many will die. But they pass and laugh as if they're going to live. Christians know the bad news that's going to happen. They know the debt of sin that they're going to pay. The Christians were lost themselves. Why don't they have compassion? Because only a few try to help. You also have the information. You know the bridge is out. Millions are passing you into an eternity. There's an urgency. Are you available to reap? The darkness is coming. Is there someone that cares? Are you involved in reaping this great harvest in some way? Are you obedient in speaking of Christ when you have the opportunity? Because honestly, the vast majority of Christians aren't. There's a verse written about them. And these are they which are sown among thorns, such as hear the word, and the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the lust of other things enter and choke the word, and it become unfruitful. We're surrounded by a world trying to distract us from the urgency of reaping the harvest. So Satan wants us to think that our job, our plans, our comfort is more important, and not think of the lost who have never heard the gospel. But if you'll be a fruitful Christian, you'll lift up your eyes. Look upon the fields that are white already to harvest. Look up from the distractions and look on the fields. Lord, we love you. We thank you so much for your word. Christ, you were the perfect example of what we should be. In this country, Lord, we're surrounded by distractions. We're surrounded by comforts, temptations, distractions, things to do, Lord. Lord, help us to focus on the field. Lord, I thank you for this church. It's been so faithful to support the ministry in Nicaragua. Lord, there are people, there are faithful soul winners in this room, Lord, but there's people that have not even involved themselves in the harvest, Lord, Christians. And Lord, so I pray that you would work in their hearts, Lord. Work in my heart. Help me to see the harvest for what it is. Help me not to grow hard in my heart for sinful, difficult people. Help me to have a compassion to continue to share the gospel, continue to teach and to preach, Lord. We thank you for your mercy that you had on us. Just like the world. We were just like the world, Lord, and I thank you for your forgiveness. Lord, we thank you for your Son, Jesus Christ, who died on the cross. Help us to serve him. Lord, put in a burning compassion in some hearts tonight to do more of whatever it is here in Morgan Hill, in another place. If you would call someone to another place, Lord, prepare them. Call them. Put that desire in their heart. Lord, put a obligation in our hearts to obey in those opportunities that we have to share you, Lord, to share the good news. The good news that there's hope. Lord, we thank you for all that you've done and for what you will do in this service. As the piano begins to play, heads bowed, eyes closed.